hear people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down real life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fallen giant key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, you know, sometimes things do work out. In the courts, not all often, but sometimes, and I'm going to tell you about one of those incidents in just a minute. Unfortunately, I think I left my notes elsewhere, so I'm going to play another Merle Haggard tune and go and round that up, and be back to you in just a couple of minutes. This is a song. Very typical of Merle celebrating family, close family, and this is Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind, and this is Merle Haggard.
Daddy Frank played the guitar in a French horn. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mom couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the band sing. That little band was all a part of living, and our only means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo, 'cause Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Mom counted on each other. Their one and only weakness made them strong. Hey, Mama did the driving for the family, and Frank made a living with a song. Home was just a camp along the highway. A pickup bed was where it bedded down. Don't ever once remember going hungry. I remember Mom cooking on the ground. Daddy Frank played the guitar in the French horn. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mama couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips, you can help the family sing. That little band was all part of living, and our own means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo. Cause Daddy Frank, the guitar man, was blind. Don't remember how they got acquainted. I can't recall just how it came to be. But there had to be some special help from someone. And blessed be the one to let it be. Fever caused my mama's loss of hearing. Daddy Frank was born without his sight. And mama needed someone she could lean on. I believe the guitar man was right. Daddy Frank played the guitar in the West Coast. Sister played the ringing tambourine. Mama couldn't hear our pretty music. She read our lips and helped the family sing. That little band was all a part of living. And our own means of living at the time. And it wasn't like no normal family combo. Oh, Daddy Frank, the guitar man was blind.
That's Merle Haggard and
Daddy Frank, the guitar man was blind. Doing things a little bit in different order tonight. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a report from a couple of weeks ago, a week ago actually. Anti-Semitism is soaring in the U.S., study shows. Whenever you read something like this from a Jewish source, and it is, this is the Anti-Defamation League, you ought to have all your antenna twitching. It usually isn't quite what it seems. And, you know, if you perhaps felt you missed something, have you seen, pogroms on every street corner and gas chambers being erected in in vacant fields? Well, okay. I'm being a little silly here, but what's the evidence of this, and why are these reports always the same? I mean, I can tell you the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith has had one of these annual audits of anti-Semitic incidents. I think going back to the late 70s. Let me tell you, every year it's the same. Worse, that was more incidents of anti-Semitism and racism, and it's just, it never gets better. Despite the fact they have all these anti-free speech laws, despite the fact they, in many cases, actually instruct the police, come on, is this true? I mean, is it really true? If you are, if you are perhaps naive, you may think so. Well, here's it's useful to actually read the statistics. Anti-Defamation League says incidents up by 57%. The Anti-Defamation League is reporting a 57% increase in anti-Semitic incidents in the United States last year. The highest tally this Jewish, they say civil rights group, that's not civil rights, it's special rights, Jewish lobby group, has counted in more than two decades, according to a press release released last Tuesday. Last year, the ADL recorded 1,986 anti-Semitic incidents, up from 1,267 in 2016. Okay, well, let's have some perspective. In a nation of 320 million people, 1986 incidents doesn't really sound too many to me, but okay. But what is an incident? That's an important question. That's the highest total since 1994 and the biggest single year increase since the ADL began collecting such statistics in 1979. The ADL said the sharp rise includes 952 vandalism incidents, an increase in 86%. The group also counted 1,015 incidents of harassment. The ADL National Director and CEO Jonathan Greenblatt said the alarming increase appears to be fueled by emboldened far-right extremists as well as the divisive state of our national discourse. Less civility has led to more intolerance, said Greenblatt. Anti-Semitic incidents at schools and on campuses nearly doubled for the second year in a row, with 457 such incidents reported in non-Jewish schools last year. And the ADL said other groups have reported a surge in the number of incidents in which far-right extremists have posted racist and anti-Semitic flyers on college campuses. Todd Gutnick said the reports tally only counts incidents in which flyers have explicitly anti-Semitic incidents.
A flyer? Well, how is that an incident?
You know, somebody's expressing an opinion. And if it's, critical of Jews or critical of Israel, it's anti-Semitic. So what exactly is being counted here? Well, let's go back to the gross numbers. There were 1,986 incidents last year. Of those, 952 were vandalism.
Now, you know, that could be anything from
smashing a building down to graffiti. And I mean, that's what vandalism is, essentially. So, somebody somewhere, maybe on a washroom wall or a construction hoarding, takes a magic marker and maybe draws a Star of David with an X over it. Or, as I've seen in some cases, I don't like the comparison, but Star of David equals swastika. Now, I guess depending where that would be, that might be vandalism. But come on. You know, is this really anything other than expression? Now, harassment. Well, the harassment is a term that has become so loosey-goosey, so broad, that I guess flyers critical of Jews or of Israel would be considered harassment. The harassment incidents include 169 bomb threats against Jewish institutions, nearly all by two men. Okay, but threats, and nothing happened. The ADL report said that more than 150 bomb threats against the Jewish community centers and day schools last year were allegedly made by an 18-year-old Israeli-American Jewish hacker who was arrested in Israel. So, and a person who may well have had close ties with the Computer Dirty Tricks Department of this Israeli Defense Force. There's even some thought that these threats, which of course got a lot of publicity, even were condemned by President Trump, were a way for the Jews to get attention. Also great for fundraising. Look, we're under attack. The threats made against our daycare institutions, our schools, our synagogues. Oh. Yeah, but they weren't real. They were by a very enterprising young Jew in Israel. Again, motive unclear. Some people suggest he had mental issues. He may well have had. Others suggest that that he's working for the Israeli Defense Force. Others, that he's just a lone nut. But these are not, they ought not to be counted at all, as they were a complete hoax. We have less information about
The second, at least I have less information about the second one. Separately, a former journalist from St. Louis pleaded guilty to making a string of fake bomb threats to Jewish organizations last year in the name of his ex-girlfriend in an effort to disrupt your life. And I think the guy was Jewish, if my memory serves me correctly. In other words, this is not organized people who hate Jews or dislike Jews or even critical of Jews. These are nutcases or people with very bad motivations. Now, when you look at this report in that way, suddenly the heavy breathing statistics really begin to melt away. The ADL is urging Congress to pass legislation to expand federal protections against bomb threats to religious institutions. The legislation approved by the House of Representatives in December awaits action in the Senate. Greenblatt urged all public figures to speak out against anti-Semitism, whether you're the President of the United States or the head of your local PTA. Well, why should you? What's anti-Semitism? Well, anti-Semitism, to get right down to it, is criticism of Jews. Well, why should Jews be immune to criticism? There's some good Jews, or Jews who've done good things. Many Jews have done bad things. Well, why should any group be somehow sheltered? And this is the sort of manipulation to which, unfortunately, many people in our society are all too susceptible. Well, here's a bonny, bonny little incident. On Monday night, Professor Jordan Peterson, who is really quite a famous psychologist at the University of Toronto, he's a champion of fighting the cultural Marxists and the politically correct. He gained a lot of publicity 2 years ago when he refused to announce in advance he was not going to go along with gender pronouns. I should say made up gender pronouns. So if the sexually weird, you know, the LGBTQXYZ crowd, as they are doing on some campuses, wanted to insist that because I'm non-binary, some would say that, which means, well, I'm neither, you know, binary is one, either or, zero or one. It's a concept in mathematics and in computing. What it means is, well, you're not male or female. You're kind of drifting. I don't know, you're not male or female. What are you, a cat or a tapeworm? But anyway, some of these weirdos, and they are a tiny, tiny fraction of 1%. Homosexuals, the whole homosexual, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, mixed-up crowd constitute about 1% of the population. The overwhelming majority of those people being lesbians or homosexual. Well, they already have their pronouns, he for the homosexuals, she for the lesbians. So the transgendered, or they're just the genuinely mixed-up, and I was going to say another word, but this is a family show, constitute an incredibly tiny proportion of the population. They want to set the agenda. They want to be able to say, well, I want to be called they, or Z instead of he or she. Well, Jordan Peterson said, that's bollocks, or that's nonsense. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to address you as you appear. So if you appear or present as male, I'll call you he. If you present as female, I'll call you she. You know, if you, on the other hand, if you think you're Napoleon, I'm not going to have to call you the emperor. Well, he got a lot of flack. He was even suggested that that might violate the Ontario Human Rights Code. You quickly see human rights have nothing to do really with human rights and everything to do with minority privilege. Well, that's yet to be seen whether that will happen. Anyway, all this is kind of a long-winded introduction to Jordan Peterson. And he was speaking Monday night at the law faculty at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. And that attracted quite a lot of attention. There was a capacity crowd of almost 500, no, I'm sorry, almost 800, and a protest of about 150 weirdos out front. I'm going to read part of Christy Blatchford's account because it's a good one. They're prancing in front of the this crowd. Well, one says, "No freedom for hate speech." Oh, yeah, I always love the ability of people, of the radical left and the would-be censors, to know in advance what you can say. No freedom for hate speech. Whatever hate speech is. Well, hate speech is, that doesn't tell you very much about what the words are. It tells you everything about the people saying it. Hate speech is usually speech some aggrieved, privileged minority hates. So there's one sign. No freedom for hate speech. I'm looking at the crowd there. And of course, I can't see all 150 faces, but the overwhelming majority are white. I see a East Indian or Native woman, maybe two. The overwhelming majority were white. These are deluded, ruined minds, ruined by cultural Marxism and self-hatred. And prancing in front of them, is somebody with what side she's on. Anyway, this is a very interesting column by a woman who's a consistently good courtroom reporter, Christy Blatchford from the National Post, and this is called "The New Freedom Fighters," and she's playing with words there. What she really means is these are the people who are fighting freedom. Not fighting for freedom, fighting against freedom. In the category of the deeply satisfying, highly amusing, there surely can be nothing better than watching a group of students, many of them white, furiously chanting, "Fuck white supremacy! Fuck white supremacy!" What does white supremacy have to do with freedom of speech? Well, okay. Presumably, they not only check their privilege, but also flush with settler guilt, paid extra at the county to do so. This was part of the infantile exercise a motley crew of protesters indulged in on Monday night at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, where the University of Toronto psychology professor and now best-selling author Dr. Jordan Peterson was giving a lecture. While Peterson spoke to a near-capacity crowd, an estimated 820 people, according to the university, inside the storied old Grand Hall, a group a fifth the size, estimated at about 150, outside, banged on garbage bins, screamed, spun noisemaker whirly gigs, blew whistles, and chanted obscenities. Well, I'm not laughing at them, really. This is a mark of the dangerous and infantile nature of the censorship forces, and Chrissy's used the word censorship, used the word infantile. One of them, the protesters, a 38-year-old woman who's not a Queen's student and who was identified Wednesday by the Kingston Whig Standard as Alison York, got so carried away pounding on a stained glass window that she broke it. In other words, vandalism. She was later arrested, whereupon she allegedly threw a fit in the squad car, an officer, and had to be carried to her cell. That sounds as though she's off her meds or not in her right mind. Oh yeah, she's also a Native Indian, we'll find out. Police searched her backpack and found a garrote. That's a metal wire with handles of a sole purpose instrument designed for strangling. As an acquaintance remarked, reading a Kingston headline Tuesday that said mildly, "Protester breaks window at Queen's University, resists arrest. Assassination attempt might be more like it." York appeared briefly in Kingston bail court Wednesday and was due back in court, which she's released, unfortunately, and was due back on the 22nd.
She's a modern-day freedom fighter, by which I mean she was a fighting against freedom of speech and of expression, and for censorship and the shutting down of debate. Protest organizers were quick to educate Elliot Ferguson, the Whig Standard reporter, about the historic injustices York had been battling. Oh, I see. The historic injustices, he's 38. Keep in mind that they broke a window of a huge, profoundly wealthy university that is situated on unceded land, organizer Claire Constance told Ferguson on Wednesday. Now, that's kind of interesting. See, what they're saying is, it's really Indian land. Well, we conquered it, fair and square. It's not Indian land. In some cases, Indians have traditional Indian claims to land have been recognized, and they have reserves. Some historical injustice. And it didn't happen, but if it happened over 200 years ago. Does this actually give this dingbat, Allison York, at age 38, any right to smash a window? It doesn't matter whether it's a wealthy institution or not. That's not the point. Let's keep in mind. Having cut her hand breaking the window, Constance said, injured, scared, knowing how hard the law comes down on indigenous people when it comes to protecting the property of settlers, they ran. It's unclear from the interview whether Constance, by persistently using they, was attempting not to prejudice the case against York, or if York preferred the pronoun, York's preferred pronoun is they. You know, she, in addition to being an indigenous person with a hair trigger temper, sexually mixed up, don't know. But listen to the explanation of why she freaked out. So having cut her hand breaking the window, York, injured, scared, knowing how hard the law comes down on indigenous people when it comes to protecting property of settlers, ran. Well, what an explanation. So having broken the window, which she had no right to do, and in the process, the silly twit, having cut her hand, allegedly injured and scared, and knowing that the law would be harsh on her. The law is not harsh on Indians in Canada. In fact, they get what's called the native discount. That's right, there's prejudice in their favor, because allegedly they suffered colonialism and racism and all the rest of it. This is the sort of brainless, absolutely contentless excuse-making that passes for thought so often in Canada when it comes to minorities, particularly the Native Indians. Here was an out-of-control Indian female. Out of control. Hitting the window so hard she smashes it, then cuts her hand, and then when they try to arrest her, absolutely freaks out. Protesters, after all, weren't trying to disagree with Peterson or his controversial ideas, which ought to be barely controversial. He rocketed to public attention over his stance on Bill C-16, which 2 years ago added gender identity and expression as protected grounds in the Canadian Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code. So in other words, it's a hate crime if you willfully promote hatred against a whole list of privileged groups: race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, and now sexual identification. I may look like a man, but I feel like a woman today. I mean, look like a man, but I'm pretty mixed up. You know, do we have to cater to this? Do we have to cater to people's mental illness? Well, we shouldn't. And Professor Peterson's disagreement with the notion that those who choose to identify as whatever must be addressed by their pronoun of choice. In other words, if I, as a short, old, straight, white woman, decide to be called they or him or the King of England, I must be accommodated.
And she makes a good point. I like to make give the example. If I wake up this morning and I've got the two of my three cats lying on the bed beside me, and I think, well, I think I'm a cat today. You really don't have to meow at me. You really don't. You know, it's a sign of a lost society where we can't even get the little common sense things right. And that scares me, because when you completely lose your compass, you don't get the big things right either. Like immigration, we're being invaded. We, the European founding settler people of North America, are being replaced by policy. That's the important thing, by policy. Immigration policy, concocted and agreed to by all the major parties, the Republicans and the Democrats in the United States, the liberals, the conservatives, the Socialist New Democratic Party, the supposedly separatists and nationalists in Bloc Québécois, and of course, the lowly Green Party. They all agree. Or, put it differently, they will publicly disagree with immigration policies which will replace us by the middle of this century in Canada, and by probably 2040 or 41 in the United States. Those are the big things. But if you can't get the little things right, if you're mixed up as to how to deal with gender, and how to deal with, quite frankly, in the case of the transgender, mentally ill people, they're seriously messed up. We may feel sorry for them, you might want to counsel them, but to cater to their lunacy? No way. And Christie continues, further and of undoubtedly great interest to the law school, Peterson was speaking about compelled speech, which none other than the Law Society of Upper Canada, or now it calls itself the Law Society of Ontario, is forcing its members to adopt by demanding they create a mandatory statement of principles in which they acknowledge their obligation to promote equality, diversity, and inclusion. Yeah, and that's compelled speech. Usually anti-free speech laws prohibit certain types of comments or speech. But compelled speech, if anything, is even worse. Here the lawyers have to design, each one has to, it's like their own confession. They have to design a statement of principles, but not their principles, you know, which they thought about and might wish to testify to or proclaim, but no, principles imposed on them by others, or by the Law Society, which recognizes their obligation to promote equality, diversity, and inclusion. What's that mean? Equality. Lawyer's supposed to defend or assist clients in need. How does he promote equality? Treat everybody fairly? I don't know. That might be okay. Promote diversity. Well, why would you want to promote diversity? Or at least, why would you have to promote diversity? Diversity, we're told, is our greatest strength. No, in fact, it's a prescription for greater and greater disagreement, chaos, and loss of rights. But anyway, Peterson obviously touched a real nerve in the body, in the body public, because his popularity has soared ever since. His book, 12 Rules for Living, An Antidote to Chaos, is a top bestseller list around the world. He now has about 20 different email addresses divided by category just to handle the volume. And he's become famous and hopefully rich along the way. He was at Queen's at the invitation of its law school to give the inaugural Liberty Lecture, a new series supported by alumnus and veteran Toronto lawyer Greg Piasecki. As soon as the lecture was announced, people lost their minds, demanding it be canceled. I'm actually not laughing. It's pathetic. Oh, I feel scared. I don't feel safe if this man comes on campus and speaks his ideas. I'm scared. Give me a
same face, Spice.
Isn't it scary that in the very place where ideas should be openly and furiously discussed and debated and criticized and so on, the response is, shut them down. But though some professors, students, and others signed a letter against Peterson, even setting foot on campus, the law school dean, Bill Flanagan, and Queen's principal, Daniel Wolfe, stood solidly behind the lecture, and the law professor, Bruce Pardee, who organized it. As Wolfe said in his blog, uncharacteristically blunt for an academic, let's be clear here. What is at issue is nothing less than our commitment to academic freedom. If the views expressed, however uncomfortable for some, are not a violation of Canadian law, related university policies, or otherwise demonstrate an intention or effect of inciting hatred or violence, then as academics, we should listen and present opposing ideas through informed and respectful dialogue. I'm not even sure I like all those qualifications. How would one know in advance the speech that hasn't yet been given might have the intention or effect of inciting hatred? Even the defenders of freedom of speech, often in Canada, I think have retreated too far. Thank heavens, though, for the university's Lavanna Gender Advocacy Center. Let's have that one again. The Lavanna Gender Advocacy Center. What does that mean? You have to advocate for gender? I'm for men. No, I'm for women. Honestly, mental illness stalks this land. It gets even funnier. And the Center on the Education on Queer Issues Project. And they were quick to offer their own chill-in in response. There will be coloring pages, music, food, and discussion, its statement said. People are free to come and talk, vent, eat, color, or just sit and do your work. That division seems just about right. Adults in the Great Hall, precious at the coloring tables, and the new freedom fighters outside. And of course, what she means is fighting against freedom, not fighting for freedom.
Again, a first-rate, excellent column by a woman who I've repeatedly praised as a really good, probably the best courtroom reporter in Canada. On legal issues, she's among the very best.
We might laugh at it in a sense, but the reign of political correctness on campus and the intolerance, you know, from the very people you would expect would be the first to defend freedom of speech, because there have been times in the past where various politicians have tried to shut down freedom of speech on campus, and you would think that the people who are intellectuals would be on the front lines of fighting for freedom of speech, and yet, sadly, they're not. At many universities, it is a very commodity that is in very short supply. Common sense and freedom of speech. And the recognition that this is important, you don't have a free society without freedom of speech. In fact, the basis of political rights is freedom of speech. Without that, just the right to mark a ballot
isn't sufficient. How can you intelligently mark a ballot if you without freedom of speech, where there can be discussion and debate? Yeah, probably better than no rights at all, but this is something that people have fought for years as absolutely fundamental right, the right to freedom of speech, and to see it so blithely rejected on campus, or by the totally phony baloney, free speech, hate speech is not free speech. No, hate speech is usually covers comments that the speaker doesn't like. The person who screams hate speech usually is actually saying, "I hate what you're saying," and. and therefore, you should see that's an opinion. Right? That's fine. You hate what I'm saying, or you dislike what I'm saying. That should not give you the right to say, and you must not be allowed to say it. But that is almost always the conclusion. I don't like what you're saying, or what you might say. Sometimes, you know, they haven't even heard what's on your mind. I don't like what you might say, and therefore you cannot say it. Oh yeah, and somebody else who might be interested in what you have to say should not be allowed to hear it. That really is the message of the censor. I don't like what you once said, and therefore you cannot say it. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to play for the rest of my musical interlude tonight a couple of songs by a very lovely lady, good friend of mine. Her name is Julie Keach Harris. She lives near Nashville, Tennessee. She's a country and western singer, and this is the first song is a bar called John A's. Which is in Nashville, on music in the Opryland area. It's called John A's, and then the second song is Becky Hobbs' song called "Jones on the Jukebox." So the first one was one of her favorite performing venues, and it was the Ballad of John A's. Take Raleigh Parkway to exit 12.
reflections of a woman whose world just fell apart. Now the life we built together and the golden rings are gone. And it's whiskey versus memory, and it looks like the race is on. And I've got Jones on the jukebox, you on my mind. I'm slowly going crazy, a quarter at a time. He's not loving her today, oh, but I'm still doing time. I've got Jones on the jukebox, and you on my mind. The cowboys in the corner are making eyes at me, but I just want George and Jack will help me through the night. And I've got Jones on the jukebox, you on my mind. Well, I'm slowly going crazy, a quarter at a time. He stopped loving her today, oh, but I'm still doing time. I've got Jones on the jukebox,
lovely Julie Harris. She's just a wonderful, wholesome lady, a loyal wife, really an engaging entertainer, and always like to play her records. Well, good news. It's not always bad news, fortunately. hard to believe that social workers would actually have time for this, but they did. But a judge has overturned a terrible decision by the Children's Aid Society of Hamilton. And it involved anti-Easter Bunny foster parents. Yeah, hard to believe. But, there were these two parents had their two foster daughters seized from them on one day's notice a couple of years back. And they are Bible-believing Christian parents, and they said that they would not, they don't believe in lying, and they don't believe in lying to children, and that they would not tell any foster child that the Easter Bunny exists. Their religious beliefs so offended a social worker, children's aid worker, that the children were seized. The two in question, they're the Bar couple, BAAR, they're Dutch, they're Christians, and they're members of the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America. And they appeal to the courts to clear their name. And this is a victory both for free speech and for freedom of belief. An Ontario Child Welfare Agency
place promoting belief in the Easter Bunny above preventing possible trauma when it removed two girls from the foster home because the Christian couple refused to lie about the bunny's existence, an Ontario judge ruled. In a stinging indictment of the actions of the Children's Aid Society of Hamilton, a court judgment declared the Children's Aid Society violated the foster parents' right to freedom of religion and freedom of expression when the children were taken from their home and their fostering, that's the agreement between the bars and the Children's Aid Society of Hamilton, was canceled. Derek and Francis Bars, who lived in Hamilton at the time but have since moved to Edmonton, sued the Children's Aid Society last year, saying that a Children's Aid Society worker insisted they proactively tell girls in their care, aged 3 and 4, the Easter Bunny was a genuine, despite the couple's belief that all lying is wrong. Now, whether you would be quite that strict or not, I don't know, but they have certainly they should have the religious right to say, no, we're not going to talk, we're not going to tell them something that isn't true. We might find a different way to tell them about Easter. The bar sought no money, only a court declaration that their rights were violated, and so that they'll not be blackballed from future fostering. Judge Andrew Goodman of the Ontario Superior Court did just that in a 62-page judgment delivered Tuesday. After a dispute over the Easter Bunny in 2016, the Children's Aid Society removed the children, ended the bar's ability to foster other local children, and likely interfered with the couple's ability to foster children in Alberta, Judge Goodman found. And he was really quite scathing. Goodman said the Children's Aid Society were actions were capricious and not in the children's best interest, and potentially reveal an underlying animus by the society and its workers. In other words, an animus, yeah. They're anti-Christian. I get it. A child welfare expert whose report was entered in evidence said the best interests of the children were lost sight of and considered secondary to Miss Lindsay's own agenda. Now, Lindsay was the Children's Aid Society worker, Tracy Lindsay, and the judge largely rejected her testimony. And he said that she was a witness whose evidence I reject as principally unsubstantiated and somewhat self-serving. Well, you know, as I suggest, sometimes the good guys do win. And this is a good one for Christians and for the couple in question, and a setback, thank heavens, for political correctness. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.